Mutation. It is the key to our evolution. It has enabled us to evolve from a single-celled organism into the dominant species on the planet. This process is slow, normally taking thousands and thousands of years. But every few hundred millennia, evolution leaps forward.
Welcome, one and all, to Judging Nerd Culture. I'm Ollie.
I'm Coop.
To talk about all the things you love and hate about X-Men.
Right, yes, absolutely. Probably not all of them.
No,
because there's a lot, a lot of stuff that happens in X-Men.
So much shit.
And there are a lot of those X-Men.
Oh yeah, I believe, I have not even read X-Men, but I read a crappy Teen Titan version for Marvel.
Sure.
In which they're like, oh, you know what happened to the X-Men? Because one of our teammates is young Cyclops.
Oh, you read that one, huh?
Went from the past to the future, helped stop his future self from being an evil asshole, and is now part of the team and afraid of becoming a horrible evil bastard. And I'm like, what the hell is this?
So, we're not dealing with that comic booky of a plot in this movie.
Thankfully.
But we're dealing with a pretty damn comic booky plot in this movie.
Oh no, this is probably the best comic book plot to get, like, an intro movie out of. Like, from start to finish, quick, wrapped up, easily. I think it's a good choice.
Okay. When you started that sentence, I wasn't all way with you.
No.
But when we finished, I was like, makes sense. I have... Well, we're going to talk about it, right? There's a lot... A lot, and by that I mean not a lot going on in this plot necessarily, but a lot to cover. But fucking X-Men. Our last several episodes have indirectly been about X-Men. Not the Zombicide one as much. There was a Marvel Zombies thing for a while that I was like, who's gonna fucking buy this? And I'm sure people did. But, you know, it's just been on the brain, so I wanted to slot this one in. And this is a superhero movie pre-superhero movies. It is very different from the just tone and aesthetic of what Marvel is doing now, and certainly what Marvel's doing now with Disney piloting the whole thing.
Yes, the first Marvel movie, X-Men 2000.
Blade is Marvel, right? That came first, I thought.
Blade's Marvel?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
You play as Blade, you can get Blade in
Marvel
fucking multiplayer,
and
Marvel Ultimate Alliance.
And he shows up in the Spider-Man stuff to...
Yeah, well, yeah, sometimes, yeah.
Fuck, what does there? I don't even know.
I barely know a thing about
it. He should be in the Hellboy universe.
Sure, yeah, okay.
I think that makes way more sense.
I mean, he's going to be eventually. Somebody's going to buy him soon. In any case, the X-Men are fucking awesome, right?
Yeah, they're pretty rad.
Yeah. I know they're not like what you read for the most part. They're the only thing I read. So like I'm rubbing my hands together with glee. Like, this is my moment. Not that this is the optimum product of supreme excellence or anything. We're not going to hate on this movie the entire time, but like, it's, God, this is so silly in a way that I was really pretty excited about every time I saw, like, oh, of course this looks like that. Oh, the technology was just not all the way there yet. Like,
of course not. Honestly, I was more just impressed watching it than anything else. Because I was watching and thinking to my first experience watching it in the theater when I was like, I don't know, 6?
Yeah.
Like, and it's pretty wild.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is it cheesy and kind of dumb and CGI'd in the ugliest way sometimes, but is it just so fun to watch? I think it is.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. And we need, like, on the one hand, this is, I think, a solid movie. Like, it holds up, and just getting to see X-Men do X-Men shit on camera in a movie is good, no matter what. Like, you know, Disney, like, there's the newer series of those films. I haven't really seen most of them. You know, I think I prefer this kind of original duo of X-Men films that they made. They never got to complete the trilogy, unfortunately, but...
Well, don't worry. They're trying...
I heard they were going to do Phoenix, man. What a bummer, you know? I guess we're going to have to see this new one and find out what's going
on. Finally get into it.
In any case, but on the other hand, we kind of need to do this before we can do X2, and that's the real killer. but I digress. We have our principal sort of cast of characters here, just to, like, I think it would be good to kind of run them down real quick before we get into the actual plot stuff.
Let's go from least important to most important.
You think so? Okay, yeah. Interesting. So this least is a fun game. Okay.
Least important. Cyclops.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, dude, like, a lot of people could juggle for the least important trophy in this, unfortunately. Cyclops has... Okay. Like, in the X-Men, he is, like, everybody's least favorite, right? I mean, you know, who is it? Nobody in the world, I think, is like, Cyclops is my number one favorite X-Man or whatever, you know. But he, like, he still is the guy. Like, they wouldn't make an X-Men movie and not have Cyclops. Mm-hmm.
She really liked him in the cartoon X-Men Next Generation or whatever.
Oh, the kids one?
Well, I don't know, like... It was slightly differently animated, but, like, Jean and Scott and Wolverine were still adults.
Okay.
But then the other kids were in high school. Like, Rogue and them.
I think Cyclops was a high schooler. Maybe there's a different thing than what we think. We're talking X-Men Evolution. Cyclops was, like, a jock kid, and it was, like, him and Rogue and Nightcrawler. And, like, Wolverine and Storm were the two... adult teacher figures. Maybe they made a different fucking X-Men.
Maybe.
Like,
I just remember one particular... Doesn't matter.
Okay.
Irrelevant.
Scott Summers, the, like, just kind of all-American boy. He's not really a nerd. He's just, yeah, like, a I'm a superhero kind of guy. Like, part of the reason I think he is always present in any X-Men business, more or less, is that his power is... I think a real good cross-section of what they're trying to go for here, where it's like, oh, this is a cool superpower that can, you know, he shoots beams out of his eyes, but always. So, fun superpower that can shoot beams at bad guys and defeat them and do superhero things, but also, when it first manifested itself, it just came out of his eyes uncontrollably unless he closed them, and... If his helmet piece gets fucked up, which it does multiple times in this movie because the villains know what they're doing, then he can't restrain it. And that's like, you know, hey, these are the X-Men. It's a little different. This is not like Iron Man or whatever, you know, or Spider-Man. Maybe that's not a perfect example, but essentially... These are superpowers that also could be a curse, to varying degrees, depending on the person.
I know that there was a more recent, in like one of the Spider-Man cartoons, one of the new ones that people seem to like. I really want to look them up. Anyways, there was a crossover between Spider-Man and the X-Men, in which they took him and were like, you're a mutant, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, no, just a random stranger who happened to get mutant powers, sort of.
Well, yeah.
And like, I always forget that they're all in the same universe for a little while until they do a crossover. I'm like, oh, none of this makes any sense.
They probably shouldn't be. Like, I mean, that's where a lot of the problems with comic books come from. Like, it's like, oh, there's giant robots gathering up mutants in this country. Wouldn't Captain America want a piece of this? Busy with other things
right
now? You
think he would be particularly upset by all of that?
Okay. Captain America's not in this movie.
Oh, God.
But Spider-Man, because it was the spider bite, doesn't count. You know, these are mutants from birth, and then the powers manifest at puberty and whatnot. And Cyclops is being, like, cool power, bad downside.
Yep. So who do you think is the next least good character?
The next least important character in this. This is such a fun game we've built for ourselves. I gotta bring it around to Toad. Of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants.
Such a good name.
They don't... I think he just says Brotherhood of Mutants. Magneto does in this. I don't think he calls them the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants this time. Because, you know, it's a little on the nose, I guess. And they do some evil. But yeah, Toad is the most... Like, he's there for the mechanics, not for the story, for the most part. Like, he doesn't really have a whole lot of lines. Apparently, in an earlier draft of the script... There's a reason I'm bringing this up. It's one of the most infamous scenes in this movie. There were supposed to be, like, as he was fighting, he was supposed to quip a bunch about what happens when a toad does this, and then he does that to somebody and messes with them with, like, parables he's telling about what toads do, which then gets paid off, except not really, because they cut those lines, so a different thing happens, and it's real bad later on. But, you know, that's...
That always did seem...
People who have seen this movie know what I'm talking about, but we'll get there when we get there, I guess. So that was supposed to be his deal, but in the meantime, now he just doesn't really have any lines, but on the team of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, who have a great master plan in this that we're going to talk about as well. Toad is just kind of a brawler. I hate to look at him, and anytime he does anything, it's very gross, which is kind of the point. He has a long, prehensile tongue and super jumping ability and just seems, like, unusually strong. He has the proportionate strength of a toad, apparently. Kicks the X-Men's ass up and down the whole fucking movie until the very end, pretty much. Hey, but story-wise, he's not as...
Agility? Important. Big deal.
For sure.
Being able to dodge, stick to walls. I mean, that's Spider-Man's entire fucking thing.
Yep. Yeah, well, Spider-Man can do two strands of adhesive. Toad's only got the one, and it's awkward for him to use more so. But,
true.
I mean, you can see why this guy would join up with Magneto, though. Like,
yeah, he's ugly and everyone hates him.
He's not as ugly as I want him to be when he keeps his mouth closed. But whenever he does anything, and he really leans into it, like, he's always posing like a toad and just, you know, doing gross shit for fun. But, you know, it makes sense. Like, the second a person in his life saw this power and was like, hey, man, that's really fucked up. Like, I would join a mutant terrorist organization, too. Like, that they will have me.
Yep.
All right, who's the next least?
Another Brotherhood. Sabretooth.
Mm-hmm.
Less lines, even. Somehow more important, but still less lines.
I like his treatment in this. I like Sabretooth, who doesn't talk, better than whenever Sabretooth does talk, and they try to give him big history with Wolverine. I never care for that very much.
They're brothers.
I agree with you. Who cares? I don't want to hear about Wolverine's past. That's the whole point, is that he's searching for it, and it's comic books, so some things shouldn't get resolved, damn it. That's my take on it. You don't have to agree. That's fine.
I think the next person who plays Sabretooth does a much better job.
Okay. We'll talk about that one of it. I'm sure the performance is much better. But yeah, this guy's just feral.
Yeah.
Which is fun.
I think he has maybe 5 words he says the entire movie.
Yep.
And then he just stands there with his giant eyebrows and big claws.
Yeah, so his eyes, what, like, he has anime, like, moe eyes. Like, I think they tried to just make it, like, look intimidating, like you know, he has black irises or whatever, but it just makes him look like he has big, wide pupils. And whenever you see his eyes, it's like, oh, he's kind of cute. Like, does not seem intended to me.
He's got big puppy dog eyes.
But as far as powers go, he's just...
strong,
basic,
big.
Like, he regenerates too, right?
Yeah.
He's like, I'm Wolverine, except my claws are shorter. So...
and not metal.
I'm always not quite as good Wolverine, and that's that.
Yep.
But, you know, as far as the muscle... and he gets clowned on by everyone the entire movie. Like, he fucks stuff up all the time, and Magneto is not having it, and that's pretty good, too.
I felt really bad for him in a couple of scenes, honestly.
Yeah.
All right, hit me with the next one.
Okay. The next least important speaking character. Like, okay, to the plot, right?
Yeah.
It's tough, because... We don't have any more of Magneto's crew left over. They're both very important. I think I gotta give it to old Jean Grey.
Jean Grey,
who, like, just conspicuously does not have a superhero name until something else happens, not in this movie. So I'm used to, in the comics, this goes all over the place. Jean Grey is a telekinetic, moves stuff around with her mind, and has limited telepathy compared to Professor X, who has just the most insane, probably should be killed for it, mind powers of any living creature. And I don't know how anyone lives a day in the world knowing that he exists without being constantly paranoid that he is fucking with them. But in any case, Jean Grey, her abilities are lesser than that, but she does have the, you know, stop and move things around. It's cool. Like, it's a cool power set. I'm used to her being so much stronger than she is in this movie. Like, both of those things are very limited compared to, like, you know, whenever I go back to X-Men, it's the Grant Morrison run where it's like pre-Phoenix and she's getting way more powerful and the characters are like noticing it. But I don't know, just going back down to like, I can just kind of read minds, but I can't really control anybody, Jean Grey, is a little different. And, you know, I like her whole deal with like the Scott, Jean, and Wolverine thing is pretty fun. But
one of the original love triangles.
Yes.
And one of the weirdest. Because, mm-hmm. like, they're, like, 18 to... I mean, in this movie, I don't know, they're, like, in their 20s.
Yeah.
But, like, in the comic books, they're, like, 18 or so, and Wolverine is visually, like, 30-something.
Yeah, that, you know, it... Like, comics are sometimes pretty bad. I don't know, it's news to you listeners, but, like, not okay. No, they're definitely teachery, like, yeah, like, late 20s, early 30s, like you said, something like that around here. Still a weird situation with Wolverine, but he...
I mean, only, he's a homewrecker.
He only has about as much memory as an older man, but not as old of a man as he is. So, like, you know, in this instance, it comes off a little better. He's definitely a homewrecker. And, like, I'll talk about the scene later on, but it's okay. In any case, Jean Grey has some relevant plot beats, but ultimately is just, like... an X person you need mm-hmm. to for it to be X-Men. Like, they couldn't just be like, here's the first X-Men movie ever. We've got Gambit, Jubilee, and Strong Guy. The character named Strong Guy.
Colossus?
And that's the, no. I'm talking about the character on the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants who's... No. On X-Factor, right?
Okay.
Comic books. Whose name is Strong Guy. Anyway... Also, they couldn't have it be them. You need Jean and Cyclops. It's just the way of things.
Jubilee and Gambit, I will watch that movie with just them.
Jubilee and Gambit, that would just be The Hangover, but with Marvel characters in it. Like, Gambit goes around town fucking things up, and Jubilee's got it. Like, she's been assigned to care for him that weekend when all the other X-Men are on a trip, and that would be great.
Indeed. All right.
That's a Deadpool movie.
That's a Deadpool movie.
Mm-hmm. All right, who's next least important?
I gotta say, it's probably Storm.
Yeah.
Like, she's cool.
I would have said Storm, but I forgot about Storm.
The only reason I add Storm above Jean is because they have the same level of importance, but I like Storm better.
Yeah, absolutely. Her powers are way cooler. Her whole deal is so much cooler.
And, like, in this particular incarnation, she is limited to anything that she can do outside.
Yeah.
She can't just, I'm going to summon lightning inside this building.
Mm-hmm.
Which... isn't always the case.
Yeah, it's weather powers, it's not lightning powers. She feels underpowered to me compared to her comics capabilities generally in this as well. Like, it just seems like she has to charge up for 3 full rounds before she can get anything to happen.
I always, like, attribute stuff like that to, she's just trying really hard not to kill everyone in the damn city.
If a character said that in the movie, I would be so into it. Like, she would gain +5 Pookie points. But, you know, Storm's awesome. Like, weather powers are always awesome. And I appreciate that they get into some of the limitations. Like, eventually someone says, hey, Storm, whip up wind and whoosh me up there. And she says, I'd fucking kill you. Like, that's a tornado. I can't just... Like, she can fly of her own power because... she can control it well enough to herself, but, like, the lack of precision of her abilities gets brought up several times, and that is, like, the logic puzzle-ness of comics that I'm always super into.
Mm-hmm.
But she has nothing to say and nothing to do, really, in this movie.
She's just cool.
She's just cool, and, like, you know, again, another staple X person.
Mm-hmm. The one that probably I've had, aside from Kitty and Jubilee...
Mm-hmm.
She's the one I had a crush on.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Kitty and Jubilee were meant for, you know, young comics reader.
Exactly.
Have this young woman who wears inappropriate outfits because we're just a bunch of skeezy fucking old men writing comics.
Exactly.
Yeah. And there's some writers do it better, but Kitty has a brief cameo in this, and I was happy to see ya.
X2, different actress. Super different.
X2, super different actress, yeah.
There's also the guy who makes fire. Different actor in the next movie.
Yep, I was like, isn't that dude supposed to be Asian? And then I was like, nope, I was thinking of Sky High. But that is, again, not the same guy.
Sky High, really good X-Men movie.
Sky High is absolutely an X-Men movie. I love the non-name brand superhero movies a lot. Kick-Ass is a little different. That's not name brand Watchmen, but...
I think we're into the important characters now.
Yeah. We're getting there. So, okay, next least is... This is interesting. Okay, I think I'm gonna give it to Senator Kelly. The only mostly non-superhuman character in this film who... I mean, spoilers for Magneto's plot from this movie from, like, 40 years ago. Senator Kelly is through the machinations of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. Like, he starts off as just a... Man, this is still super relevant today. Like, he's just saying stuff that people on the TV said today and will say again tomorrow, except it's about mutants this time. And that's another kind of core piece of the X-Men is we're going to use a fictional thing as an analog to real-world bigotry and just hatefulness so as to not be stepping on toes of anyone who actually is, like, suffering from those things. Those issues in real life, we're gonna make it a superpower thing. So Senator Kelly is like the anti-mutant, you know, like one of the three opening scenes of this movie is him giving a speech to Congress like, oh, there could be mutants in your schools, there could be mutants at your place of work, we don't know where they are, we need to keep an eye on these mutants. Like, that's his whole deal. Mutant registration. Hey, a government's making a list of specific kinds of people and keeping that on file for anyone to see what could go wrong, you know? What
could go wrong?
That kind of thing. Nobody who's a mutant wants this, and then the conflict between the X-Men, who are, let's not kill people, but do mutants' rights, and then the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, who says, fuck it, they want monsters, they got them.
Classic. You know, I'm not gonna lie, especially with X-Men, I'm usually more inclined towards that.
Oh, for sure. Like,
I think it's just so, I don't know, like, it's such a caricature of, like, bigotry, which isn't incorrect. It's just, you know, more focused because of the screen, because of the movies, because of comic books, that I'm just like, nah, just fucking kill him.
Yeah, this guy has to go. This dude sucks. Like, there are political and sociological reasons the X-Men don't want to kill this guy, in addition to, like, having hope that people can change and stuff like that. But, you know, this guy's dangerous. This guy's more dangerous than Magneto. He has to go. Then he does, eventually, in, I think, a successful way. Like, this guy's character swerves in a way that I think is pretty compelling and interesting. He is made into a mutant in a very distressing example of mutant powers that nobody likes. And, you know, is given a taste of that side, and before he dies, because of the unnaturalness of the mutation, he sort of comes around and is like, oh, fuck, I get it now. The ones I was afraid of were afraid of me. Bah, moral. He pretty much just says it just like that, but...
Pretty much.
Okay, next least.
Next least. Weirdly enough, I'm gonna go with Professor X.
Okay, yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, because, like, everyone else in this is pretty important at this point, and he's important too, obviously, but he does the least number of things that if he didn't do them, the story would still go on.
Yeah. And he's the type of character who they have to, and do, in, I think, a smart way, take him off the board before the climax of the story, because his power really is just magnificently enormous.
Yeah, there's a scene where, you know, there's a standoff, whatever, and he just straight up mind controls Sabretooth and Toad to grab Magneto's throat.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, he could have killed him.
Yeah.
Right there and then. It would have been over.
Mm-hmm. So, Magneto's powers have something to do with his helmet, right? Because otherwise everyone would have a helmet on.
Yeah, I think he just has a metal helmet that he then makes magnetic radio waves emit from. Yeah,
sure. Special metal. I'll let him have it. Whatever. You know, it is necessary. Because otherwise this whole story would be fucking over before it began. But, yeah, Professor X can mind control over a vast radius, a colossal range, and just, like, perfectly get anyone to do anything and read people's minds. And, you know, does not generally ask before using this ability. Like, this is a real... You know, if he were the bad guy, this would be a movie that was rated R and nobody would want to watch. Like, you get into some real dangerous fucking superhero shit. Yeah. Like, you know, Jessica Jones, like, that kind of thing. So he's on the side of good, and for the most part, is good.
Mm-hmm. There's actually a fan comic someone made. It was only like 3 pages long of what if Professor X didn't have the moral compass of don't control people.
Right.
And all he did was convince everyone in Congress by making them think that they believed,
yep,
oh, we should do this. And then he fixed the world in one day.
Yep.
Now, it was the funniest.
I think the comics, I think, vary back and forth as to how long one use of his power lasts on a person, like if it's just he has to manually be controlling them or if the suggestions persist. Nothing like that happens in this movie. It's only like he just plugs in his controller into Sabretooth and Toad and then pilots them for a little bit.
I'm just telling you, man, if you could just incept things, just like...
Mm-hmm. And it's not D&D, like, people can't make a will save. It always happens if it happens. Mm-hmm. You know, other telepaths can fight it off. Magneto has a way to fight it off, but other than that, nothing.
So who's next?
Okay, and then the next... we're getting up there. I am going to call it... Now, this is kind of tough. I'm going to call it Mystique. I was torn between her and who you're probably going to say next, but, like, Mystique is, I think, a very good... And it's even in the later movies, maybe I'm conflating, like, it's hard for me not to apply nostalgia to these things and conflate all of her character beats, but what she does in this movie is just as a huge mover and shaker in getting the plot to move along, and all of the shapeshifter shenanigans are extremely good. Like, you know, every plan that the Brotherhood does involving Mystique is, like... super fucking tight. She, like, infiltrates the school, no problems. She sabotages Cerebro, Professor X's power magnifying machine that, again, everyone just lets him have without without question as to his, you know, intentions.
So why would they question it?
Right. There's no suggestion that he has done that, but in any case, like, she gets in there, sabotages Cerebro, that's what sort of takes Professor X out. And just, like, she has the power to mimic anybody, you know, full shapeshifter business. And I also really like the visual on this. Like, yeah. It does look a little artificial by today's standards, but it's still just so stylish. Like, all of the plates that make up her body, like, flipping over to become the new person. They could have just, you know, fade out, fade back in, and done some real cheap fucking movie magic for this, but they didn't. And her, like... reptilian-esque native body is just super weird.
It's really cool. Also, her mannerisms, especially when in her natural form, mm-hmm. is very, just because I happen to have bought it recently, Voldo from, like...
Yeah. Like, whenever she's not in disguise, she doesn't do a whole lot of talking. Like she plays other characters and doesn't have a whole ton of character yet. That expands in X2, but she just tells a whole lot, the actress with the body language and stuff, especially whenever she's in a fight. She seems really horny about it, which is like a, you know, a thing that is definitely a trope of comic book characters. But
I think my favorite is she is capturing a guy, the senator, and she chokes him with her feet, but then bitch slaps him.
That is extremely silly, and the visual of the impact of her foot does not match the sound that it's making. Like, it's supposed to be like she's kicking him really fucking hard, but it just looks like she's playing a kind of game that I personally am none too fond of. But if that's your interest, that's your interest. Go watch this movie, I guess. It's impossible to not have fun when Mystique is doing stuff. That is the case of Mystique for mm-hmm. me.
All right, next up, I'm going to give it to Wolverine.
Really? Okay, really. Interesting.
Because Wolverine, obviously critical for this movie. He's the main character, probably, honestly.
Yeah, the viewpoint character for the most part.
Exactly. But, and he's cool, he's Wolverine. Everyone knows him. There's no way anyone listening to this doesn't know who the fuck Wolverine is.
It's not the case anymore, but he was absolutely just the biggest... super, like, the biggest Marvel for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's really funny, because in this movie, he's the tallest person, but he's supposed to be the shortest, so in every scene that he's next to anyone, they somehow make him look shorter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Wolverine's 5 foot tall.
Okay, so listen. You listen to me, and you listen good. Now that Disney has obtained the Fox movie license, also has obtained the Lucas license, are we going to get a bigger Luke, small Luke, big Wolverine, small Wolverine, buddy, buddy, buddy cop movie?
Buddy, buddy, buddy.
Where the tall and short Luke and the tall and short Wolverine team up and solve space crimes, and they fight the Shi'ar, and they fight the fucking force-wielding enemies?
Yes.
Okay, sounds good.
It's gonna be amazing.
And then they'll make a Lego one of it, and then we just continue to fucking live in this world that we live in.
Anyways, like, I brought that up as a, you know, kind of a gag, but also, it is impressive, the camera work that they do for this, mm-hmm. because, again, he's 6 foot, like, five or something. Everyone else in this movie is, like, 5'11 at most.
Yep.
And yet he's 3 to 4 to 5 inches shorter than everyone mm-hmm. on screen at any time. And that's impressive. Like, that's difficult to make.
I'm always so impressed by his hair in these classic God, X-Men movies. No. Or in the non-classic ones, like, it's just Hugh Jackman being Hugh Jackman, no matter where you watch in the X-Men canon. Like, they make it look like his fucking comic book hair. It is absurd.
It is the worst looking hair.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, man. It's just like the dedication. I'm pretty glad they didn't retain the comic book costumes, and they do make a joke about this in the movie. I don't know that I like the new costumes better, but like, I
mean, they're just leather.
They're the kind of leather daddy aesthetic going on, X-Men.
I mean, to be fair, in like a modern setting, just leather armor is probably the most effective.
Right? No, for sure. It's practical. It's, you know, they have X's on them, the BDXM outfits, but
probably a little hot in there.
Yeah. It's particularly for Wolverine, though, that's why I'm glad they changed, because his old outfit was asinine.
Sin.
Mm-hmm.
Just horrible to look at.
Yeah.
You know, originally when they first made his costume and designed all this stuff, the reason that they ended up giving him this wide-horned nonsense is because his original design looked almost exactly the fucking same as Batman. It was Batman,
mm-hmm.
but yellow.
Yep.
So like, let's just give it a wider shape.
Yeah, just can click and drag over it and stretch that out in the Photoshop that didn't exist. Wolverine is awesome.
Yeah.
Does anyone not like, yeah, maybe there used to be an era in time in which people were like, Wolverine, he's overused, but we all got over that really quickly, right? Like, Wolverine's great.
Yeah, and he's critical for this movie, but he doesn't really do anything other than mm-hmm. just kind of get tugged around and try to understand, like, what the hell's going on?
Well, yeah, I mean, he sort of tugs himself around. Like, whenever, you know, the evil mutants are doing evil things, he doesn't care for that. But the X-Men are doing wishy-washy, milquetoast, fucking spineless X-Men things, as they do in the comics and in all of their stories, and get called out for, usually by Wolverine, who says, I'm with you guys, but I'm not with you guys. You know, if there's something that needs doing, I'm just gonna go fucking do it. Like, very admirable. That's a little sneaky anime trope has made its way into this comics business. And a thing that's always the case with Wolverine is that he has typically, like, a young woman protege who he, you know, tries to be gruff and aloof, but ends up helping, which is a big trope in and of itself, but like, you know, it's just part and parcel with the character. Like, he's not really gonna fuck this kid over.
Like, his whole shtick is, I'm tough, but really I'm a sensitive man who mm-hmm. just wants people to like me, but also leave me alone.
Yeah, exactly. And he regenerates, which means he gets to be in the best fight scenes in any movie he's in, because people can actually hit him with stuff.
And himself.
And the claws, the snicked is perfect. Like, the noise the claws make is so good.
Indeed. All right, let's get to the last two characters in this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I suspected Rogue was going to be next, but
see, that's the thing.
It can go either way.
Yeah. The thing is, with Wolverine, if he gets ousted from this movie, someone could take his position. But Rogue and Magneto, the last two, like, this movie could just be about them.
Yeah.
And him chasing her and her running away.
Yeah, for sure. If that were going to be the movie, it probably would have been Kitty Pryde instead. That wouldn't necessarily work with the Machine, but yeah. We'll talk about the Machine later.
We're talking about plot relevance.
We're talking about, yeah, exactly. And I think, like, thematic relevance, Rogue is also a really big deal. Like,
yes.
Like, her power is, like, We talked about this a little bit in Radiant, where it wasn't really explained or drawn attention to how the wild discrepancy of powers and curses, if you folks listen to that episode. But in this, it's like, is a major point and gets to be a major point in the next movie. Rogue's power is if she touches anyone skin to skin, she begins draining their life force at an alarming rate, which is gonna make her life pretty damn miserable. Like, human contact is a thing that people need physiologically and psychologically, and she just can't do it.
Yeah, like, even if you don't care for sex, you need a hug.
Yeah,
like, absolutely.
And so she has to just wear long gloves 24/7, which, like, what a pain in the ass. I mean, you can't really, like, to write is gonna be really awkward, to type is gonna be really awkward, like, living is going to be really awkward when you're Rogue. And she learns of these powers at her first kiss, where she puts her then-boyfriend into a coma for 8 weeks after, like, 10 seconds of contact.
Yeah, it wasn't very long at all.
Now, the side effect to this is that if she makes contact with a mutant, she temporarily steals their powers from them. And mutants in general seem a little more resilient to it. Like, no mutant ever gets put into a coma from this.
Yeah. I think it's because you gotta go through the power buffer, and then you get to the life force.
First it steals the powers, then you charge the card. That's not that character. first you steal the powers, then you steal the life essence. So mutants get off a little easier with this. And Rogue then is illustrating the whole, like, you know, yeah, these people are vulnerable, they need to be cared for, like, they need to be, you know, mutants need to be guided and treated in a pleasant way, and also, that is scary. There's kind of a point people are making when they say we should know who these people are, because if Rogue was, you know, wanted to use this for evil, she certainly could go and do it. Mm-hmm. And it would be, like, really horrifying. Kind of a point. I'm not saying, you know, they need to be put on lists, but, like,
like, she's there to, like, give some credence to what the shitty people are saying, like, yeah, I understand why people are scared, mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she understands, because she's also very scared.
Yeah, yeah, and like, you know, this leads to her running away from home, which is kind of the inciting incident, and it's like, you know, she's terrified of everyone, like, her two formative experiences. One, almost kills her boyfriend. Two, gets pursued and kidnapped by evil mutants. And, like, where are you gonna go from there?
Yeah.
Her real name, I always forget, because she gives herself the code name Rogue before meeting any of the X-Men, which I always find a little bit funny.
That's pretty great, actually. I think she said it was, like, Marie.
Marie. Yeah, 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 that's the one. But, I mean, it makes sense. She's on the run. She doesn't want to be identified.
But Rogue?
I mean, I don't know, comic stuff. You know, they gotta throw it in somewhere. Okay. Let's get into
it. Let's talk, man. Magneto.
This is the guy.
So, alright. This entire movie is basically Magneto's movie. Yeah. He's just, I have a plan. I'm gonna execute the plan. And everything that happens in this movie is gonna be because of this driving force mm-hmm. that I am exuding into the world. Mm-hmm. And that force is, I'm gonna kill everything that isn't a mutant or make it a mutant.
Yep, pretty much. And of all of the reasons to have for this, his is pretty damn airtight.
yes.
So, Magneto is played by Sir Ian McKellen. Most likely his most famous role, I think the thing he's most known for in his film career.
It's probably the thing I know best of him, at least.
Well, yeah, no, absolutely. So him and Patrick Stewart became friends during the filming of this movie, and it was just one of the greatest relationships ever forged on this human soil in real life, of those two just magnificently kind men being friends with one another. And when one or the other of them dies, it's going to be the worst day in the universe, because we'll have to read the other one expressing their pity over it.
Yeah, it'll be a sad day.
Mm-hmm. But in any case, Magneto the character.
I'm really glad it's Sir Ian McKellen. He's a great actor, and this is a good role.
Yeah. Such a killer performance every time he does this.
And his motivations, the character's motivations for everything, is he lived through the Holocaust. He was sent to a concentration camp mm-hmm. for being a Jew and not for being a mutant.
Yep.
But now in the 2000s, he's like, oh, they're talking about mutants. The exact same, you know, mm-hmm. I think I'm going to stop this before it gets anywhere.
He says, oh, you're going to make us wear something, huh? Do you want us to get a tattoo as well? No, that's not going to happen. And hell yeah, right? Like, absolutely. Like, you know, maybe, you know, little kids don't fully have their heads around this, but I mean, as far as role model characters in fiction go, this is huge. Like, they tell you, you know, they should tell you about the Holocaust when you're in school. I guess that's not legal that they have to anymore in some states, but,
well, you know, in some textbooks they call slaves servants.
Yeah.
Or they avoid the word helpers, slave.
You know?
Which is the weirdest anyways.
Man, oh man, these people, like, we gotta get the machine out. And I'm just talking about the guillotine. But Magneto has a different machine in this movie.
Yes. His plan is partially just fuck humans, because they want to Holocaust us again, probably, eventually.
And they do. He's right. A lot of them do.
It's true. But his plan is, well, if I make them all mutants, then they're just going to have to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah,
and I'm
yeah.
like, cool. That's pretty solid. Downside, if they get turned into mutants, they'll probably die. Because, pro tip, if you get mutated very quickly, that's called cancer and you die.
Right. And it manifests in a very specific way for Senator Kelly, as we talked about. He just turns into a slime man. The nature of it is not, yeah. you know, that spoilery. And then his body,
gills.
Yeah, he has gills. He's just a liquid man, which is how he escapes from Magneto's stronghold. He just slips through the bars, and then eventually decomposes into Jell-O because he can't take it.
Honestly, I don't think he was a liquid man. I think he was that ugly slime fish.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. Blobfish.
He was a blobfish. That was
his makes
power.
Sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, his skin was definitely affected, too. Like, it looks really gross. In any case, Magneto has this machine. And
I don't not know how they describe its mechanics, how it works.
No, they don't at all. And cool. If they did, we would have to enter into a certain segment. But we don't, so we can't this time.
Unfortunately.
Via mechanical magic, Magneto himself has to stand in the center of these, like, spinning turbine things and power them himself with his magnetic powers. Like, I'm assuming if the device just had to spin, he could have a motor do it, or anything that makes stuff spin. But this is me meeting the movie more than halfway. I'm going to assume it's because he's a mutant, and it's drawing upon that somehow to project it into... It's bullshit. Like,
yes.
I don't care for this machine too terribly much, in case that hasn't been clear up until now.
Like, I dig his plan. The machine's a dumb MacGuffin.
And as far as something to sell in, like, a two-hour movie, you know, fine. Fine and dandy, I'll take it, you know?
Like I was saying, I don't think this plot is, you know, I don't know, like, award-worthy. But I do think it's an incredibly quick and concise comic book arc.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the central thrust is that the Brotherhood of Mutants, Magneto's team of, like, you know, violent mutant abolitionists, essentially, not technically abolitionists, but just mutants' rights, legally definable terrorist organization, which the X-Men probably also count, but that's a separate thing.
they did blow up a train station.
That's true. It was an accident, but that's part of the whole deal. That they want Rogue for Magneto to temporarily, like, sort of force her to take on his powers, which for some reason also forces her to spin the machine. Like, I don't know, how it compels her to do that.
I think the damn thing that she has to hold on to whatever
something
has
like
to
that.
Do something.
Like, mild electric shock, or she can't, like, the powers just go haywire when she has them, something like that. Because she only ever otherwise takes on Wolverine's powers in the movie, and those going haywire is the same as them behaving regularly. It's just that she regenerates herself.
I'm glad she didn't pick up his secondary power to have claws of bone.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it would go away eventually, but that's a real awkward situation. And his tertiary power to smell really well, because then she'd have to catch Wolverine's scent he's used to, because it's him, but nobody else would be used to it.
There's a lot of things going on with Wolverine, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Apparently, this is my favorite fun fact of movies, like, of all time. Hugh Jackman didn't know that there was an animal called a Wolverine. He just thought it was a wolf, but... I mean, like, okay, right? There's probably all kinds of bizarre fucking monstrosities that live in Australia that we don't know about. He's from another land. Wolverines, are in the U.S. states that nobody fucking talks about. we live in Michigan. they're native to us. But he was just like, oh yeah, I studied wolves and I watched wolf videos and tried to like adapt my face and kind of my movements to it. And they were like, oh buddy, this is not a wolf thing, my man.
Right. And to be honest, I think he picked the right animal to embody, because I don't think Wolverine embodies a Wolverine.
Right.
All too often.
Wolverines, so they're awkward, they make a stupid noise, they're weirdly small for what you think they would be, and their, like, proportions are, like, they're not a cool animal by any means. Their two powers that make them damn near unkillable in the wild are, A, they smell terrible, so nothing wants to approach them, that's interesting, and two, they just go so fucking hard in a frenzy that anything that could attack them is just like, even if I kill it, it'll halfway kill me right back. Like, it's just not worth it. The guy's just gonna go psycho. He has no morals. That is the animal kingdom's perception of Wolverines. That is accurate.
That's fair.
Man. but Rogue and Magneto. He wants to use her to drain his powers temporarily to power the machine so he doesn't have to die about it. And that's another thing that I'm like, you know, would he sacrifice this innocent mutant kid? Probably, like, you know, this what he's trying to achieve is to transform the entire United Nations, who they all gathered in this outdoor park to have a meeting, like, in like where people would have an outdoor wedding is what it looks like. So they're just begging for something to fucking happen. At least they'll still be alive for a couple days this way.
I think it's, I'm gonna give some benefit of the doubt to Magneto as being a not horrible person, bad person, not yes. horrible, and say that maybe since she's younger, she'll probably live.
She's like, are you gonna kill me? And he's like, yes.
Yeah.
They just come right out and say it. So like, hashtag not my Magneto. You know. But again, it's comics, which means these characters manifest in all kinds of different ways. And whenever anyone talks about comics characters they really like, what they mean is, oh, look at this top 5% of this character, and the rest is complete unfathomable fucking garbage, and that's comic books.
Yeah.
This is somewhere in between. Still Magneto, though. Like,
it's still good. Still a good story. Mm-hmm. Definitely one of the, probably the most compelling backstory for a villain. We've talked about Magneto before in things that aren't even about the X-Men.
It's so hard not to talk about Magneto. I've just been on a real Magneto kick lately. I don't know what it is. But I wanted to get a piece of this. And yeah, it's definitely is, he is making all the action happen. He has actually trained his minions to fight, which Professor X appears to, but man, they just, again, get their asses kicked so fucking thoroughly every time the two groups come to blows.
They haven't finished their caution room yet.
Their oopsie-daisy room?
Yes.
Yeah, no, the danger room isn't in this one, is it?
No.
Yeah, interesting.
Alright, so let's go to pick out some of the best and worst scenes we think from this movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then we can call it, you know, summations from there. Mm-hmm. But first, let's evolve and self-promote.
Yeah, okay.
I couldn't think of anything.
Yeah, no, I was trying to.
Got like, nothing.
Around when we were at Rogue, I was like, there's got to be something, right? Rogue, steal the money. That's not a good look. That's not on brand. Self-promotion corner.
Self-promotion corner it is. So we've all been here before. We just wanted to let you know that we have the Twitter accounts, the Facebook accounts, the Instagrams, all of it. And you can find all of it at Cryptid Delta for Twitter, or at Delta Cryptid Productions for everything else. Mm-hmm. And through any of our websites, you'll be able to determine what's the newest thing, what's going on. Any updates will come directly through there. Other than that, our big thing that we could really use some help with is Patreon. Patreon.com/Delta Cryptid Productions. We've removed our $1 tier. It was worthless. You can give us $1. That's fine with us. But at $3, you can help us and get an entire second podcast out of it. Mm-hmm. It's well worth the money. We take everything that we've talked about and make it just so much better, usually, or so much funnier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is the Delta Cryptid remix. They're a little shorter episodes, but, you know, and with the added context of the main ones, still, we get loose and get goofy, and they're always a lot of fun. Like, you will enjoy yourself, and for $3 a month, you get the entire backlog and every other one we make. So, not every other, all of the new ones we make.
Yes.
But there's not a lottery system here.
Along with that, we're also going to be soon adding a PDF of our of the base rules for our role-playing game, I believe, is something we talked about.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yes, confirmed. Business meeting, checkeroony.
We did talk about that before.
If you're listening to this podcast, you probably fucking like dice games, you goddamn nerd. So we're making one, and it is pretty good. We're having fun with it so far.
Yeah, so far, pretty good.
We would love some feedback, so we're going to put that on there. Patrons of any level, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
levels above that, you get some more bonuses. You get to suggest some episodes, be on an episode, just send out a message. Either you can use it to advertise through us or just to say hi to your friend, propose to a girlfriend. Really, please don't do that. That sounds terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, like if you're really, really sure, you
like,
know.
I'll feel honored, but also terrified to say any of the words incorrectly.
This is a little, that's true. There'd be a lot of pressure on us. We'll still do it, though. Anything for money.
Excuse me. So, last thing.
Mm-hmm.
We've put out some YouTube videos.
Yes.
They're pretty all right.
Yeah.
We're still new to it. There's a lot of ups and downs and, oh, this does this. We should use this method of things.
All right, listen. You compare us to the first YouTube videos ever. The first YouTube video of those guys at the zoo, who gives a shit? Ours, incredibly entertaining by comparison. So we're tearing right off.
We have a few different segments up there that'll be expanding in the future. Mm-hmm. We'll soon have a lovely library of anime and manga reviews, let's plays, and whatever else we can come up with.
We are playing that samurai game right now. Sekiro Shadows Die Twice. You've probably heard of it, you goddamn nerds.
I was going to say Second Samurai, Son of the Seven Samurais.
Second Samurai, Son of the Seven Okay, so that opens a very interesting genetic sort of understanding. We're going to have to get there when we get to anything like that.
Yes, that sounds great. but if you enjoy our nonsense and like video games or anything else that we do, come give it a watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hell yeah. Yeah, that's it, right? We've been doing a bunch of new stuff. I'm trying to remember. Okay, we got them all. Yeah.
We got them all.
Okay, great. Right.
All right, back to the show.
I'll slow that down. Okay, back to the show. Favorite scenes, ups and downs. Like, to me, we got a lot of ups. I'm going to lead with one sort of broad down over the scope of the movie. It takes me out of it a little, but it's far from like a scarring mark. It's just, you can tell they were really worried that people who might not know what the X-Men were might come to this movie. And Professor X in particular, like everyone to an extent, Professor X in particular gets hit with some real expositionitis, you know? Like, he just, so many scenes are just Patrick Stewart in his wheelchair saying, like, oh, we're the X-Men. We're a school for mutants, and we, you know, we train the gifted ones and try to compete against the government, and there's Magneto. He's a bad mutant, and he wants to kill everybody, but we don't. And just a whole lot. It gets really explaining. And, like, it's Professor X. I'm not mad. I like all of these characters explaining and being explained to, but, you know, that, I don't know if you observe this to be the case, too.
I agree. And my biggest, I don't know, downside to this movie is that, despite it being mostly exposition, maybe because it's mostly exposition, the dialogue is very forgettable. I don't remember anything they say in this.
I remember a couple things, but we'll talk about it.
I think I remember a couple things, but not much.
Right.
And that's unfortunate, because, like, I did enjoy the movie. I thought it was fun, but I remember, like, the character's actions more than anything else. I don't remember, remember when douchebag one said to douchebag three?
Right.
It's, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I still found this to be real, you know, real entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my biggest downfall. It's just the dialogue was a little.
And we, like, I'm not, you know, dismissing the validity of either of the things we've said, but we've been used to a whole new breed of superhero movie. Like at the time, this was groundbreaking, but we don't judge things for at the time. We judge things for as they are right now, damn it. Just, you know, to give it the credit in the past where it was due, compared to, say, Spider-Verse, which is extremely quotable, you know, like, or at least scene quotable, but also regular quotable, like, go listen to our Spider-Verse episode after you're done with this one, people. But in any case, into a line that I really do enjoy quite a bit, the sort of initial Logan, Jean, and Cyclops interaction.
Okay, yeah. I do agree with this.
So initially, Wolverine and Rogue kind of meet up. They're birds of a feather in that they're both, you know, running away from a world that hates and fears them, etc. Specifically, Rogue ran away from home, and Wolverine's like, can't let this fucking kid die in the snow up here in Canada. But they get roughed up by the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, rescued by the X-Men, and they're coming to realize, like, hey, this guy doesn't need our medical help, actually. He's fine. So Wolverine is just flirting real damn hard with Jean Grey, who, like, she's mad pretty. I get it. You know, in the comics, it, like, it's hard to tell, you know, you can tell by whose titties are the most out who the writer thinks you should think is the hottest. But other than that, it's like the chemistry is believable in the film in a way that's just hard to do in comics. You know, Jean says, nope, I'm with him. I'm going to go continue to be with him. They're still a little flirty, though. Cyclops comes in. Wolverine's like, he's like, hey, you're going to tell me to stay away from your girl? And Cyclops is like, nah, if I had to tell you that, she wouldn't be my girl, now would she? And then the two of them banter back and forth. But on his way out of the room, Cyclops is like, yeah, by the way, stay away from my girl. which means Cyclops apparently realized how hot Wolverine was while they were talking or something. I mean,
I read it as like, Cyclops is weirdly feminist, is like, she's not my girl, she's her own woman.
I could buy either one. And also just like,
also when I say weird, I mean surprisingly anything from a comic,
surprisingly
book.
For this movie, for the time, and so on and so forth. Yeah exactly. Just like, either way, his confidence is shaken a bit in like a way that, yeah, I kind of get it. This dude's, it's huge act man, like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Fucking Hugh Jackman.
Yeah. And the two of them develop a camaraderie of sorts going forward. But
I guess.
You know, it is accurate to the comics. That's just a wonderful little scene. What about you?
It's near the end, actually, and it's also a Wolverine and Cyclops scene, mm-hmm. in which, I don't know, there's no dialogue. It's 2 seconds long. Mm-hmm. He just goes through the metal detector. Like, it goes off because he's made of metal,
mm-hmm.
and then everyone looks back, he destroys the thing, and then he just retracts his cross to give Scott the middle finger, and mm-hmm. Scott just laughs and mm-hmm. walks away, and I'm like, this is the best scene mm-hmm. in this fucking movie.
Also connected to that, like, they're you know, Mystique is about, so they're trying to proof each other to see who, you know, make sure so-and-so's not a shapeshifter, and, you know, Scott's like, how do we know it's really you? And he's like, you're a dick. And on the one hand, no, that's not really enough. You guys should have arranged something ahead of time, like, you knew Mystiques were afoot. But also, presumably the bad guys would think that the X-Men are all friends. So, like, this is a decent proofing method. Like, you know, they've got to move fast. It makes sense.
Yep. It's real fun. I do like their banter and their back and forth. As far as a, I don't know, rival for a love triangle, which I'm not mm-hmm. usually big on love triangles. I'm just like, fuck them both. Just yeah. have fun. But I do like this one. It's funny to me.
Oh, yeah. And, God, all of the romance stuff with Scott Summers and Jean Grey in the comics, like, that's a fucking bitch to unpack. A lot of stuff happens there, and Wolverine only has to do with some of it, but it, like, who, they could have gone way more complicated is my only point. I want to see Mr. Sinister in an X movie someday. That would be a real treat.
Oh God, isn't he the white-skinned guy with the weird red, like, mm-hmm. almost Dracula-esque?
His whole plan is that he wants Jean Grey and Cyclops to fuck, so they create the ultimate X-baby, which becomes Cable. And his plan to do this involves, like, interrupting their wedding and capturing them and stuff, rather than just waiting for them to naturally consummate their marriage and then going to steal the baby.
Yeah, Mr. Sinister is a fucking idiot.
Yeah, Mr. Sinister and his team of the Nasty Boys. Please. They are the best. Nope. It is Mr. Sinister. The fucking cover of the comic book is like, will the X-Men be able to deal with Mr. Sinister's Nasty Boys?
Oh,
comics
God.
Are incredible. They are not in this movie. A scene that I really enjoy a whole lot that I find perplexing, but that sells really well. all most of this comes toward the end, I guess. But Wolverine is
the beginning part is a lot of lead up and exposition and preparation.
Yeah. Wolverine is fighting Mystique, who has shapeshifted into Wolverine, and just the acting of the two Hugh Jackmans here is extremely good. Like, Hugh Jackman pretending to be horny Mystique shapeshifted into Wolverine is a really fun time.
Impressive acting, honestly.
Yes. And she kicks his ass. Like, she doesn't have a metal skeleton, but she's extremely fast. And, like, you know, his skin is above his bones. He still feels pain. And also, his testicles are not associated with his bones. So when she kicks him in the balls, that hurts him too. He does, though, like, at some point their claws clash and his cuts right through hers and she screams. And I'm like, what happened to Mystique just then?
That's a good question.
That still is her mass. What part of her was that? He obviously feels pain. How did she do it? And also, why would she clash claws with him anyway? What did she think was going to happen? Sabretooth fought him before and didn't kill him. Like, you gotta understand something. Like, her plan is not all the way there, but
maybe it was a reflex. Just like, claws coming toward me.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Can she... I don't even know what her powers really... the extent of, the like, their ability is.
I do know. I hate jumping into so many explanations, but, I
fucking hate you.
At one point, Nightcrawler's backstory was that Mystique was morphed into a man as a disguise and then fell in love with a woman and they made Nightcrawler biologically. So Mystique at least has the power to do that. They retconned that because they didn't want that in the books because it was too early for canon Mystique lesbian relationship, which is a huge bummer, and that's my Nightcrawler. Because they made it some real stupid shit instead. But
isn't it just she's the mom?
No, dude. It's like there's a demon guy in hell. Like,
but she's still,
like,
the mom.
Well, I think the other woman is still the mom. Like, the other woman from that storyline is still Nightcrawler's mother. Maybe?
I'm pretty sure the demon fucks Miss Anna anyways.
It's complicated.
We should get to X2. I love Nightcrawler.
I love Nightcrawler so much. X2's Nightcrawler is real weird, but we're still going to let it happen. Yeah, I don't know. Best scenes. I have one in the pocket. But what do you want?
I got one more. I really enjoyed the entire train fight scene.
Yeah.
Like, the train station lead up to it, in which the bad guys showed off their understanding of, oh, Cyclops is here, let's take away his goggles.
Mm-hmm.
Like, immediately.
Yep.
First thing they did.
Toad slurps them off his face, and then he... unwittingly blows up half the fucking train station with his eye lasers, yeah.
You'd think you'd have, I don't know, the reflexes built into, oh, something's pulling this off my face, I'm gonna close my goddamn eyes.
These are novice X-Men. Like, I feel like they must have just formed, like, a week before Wolverine got there, because they have no fucking idea what they're doing, most of the time.
Definitely not.
Mm-hmm.
I just enjoy this scene, especially since once he blows up the fucking ceiling, that's when... Storm goes, all right, time to lightning this bitch.
Yeah. She adapts. I thought it was just really weird. Like, Jean wasn't up to anything. She should have gone with them, especially for searching for someone, which her telepathy was easily be capable of. And then, you know, it could have presumably have gone differently. But in any case, still a cool fight. Like, I'm not gonna be that movie man. You know?
Yeah. But this fight scene, this little action piece, leads up to Wolverine having a little chat with Rogue of like, hey, everything sucks, man.
Mm-hmm.
At least at this place, things suck, but they'll know how to talk to you about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then Magneto shows up and just puppets him because metal bones. Yep.
I like, that's one of the most explicit, like, rock beats paper beats scissors. That's backwards.
Yeah.
But in any case, that's one of the most explicit just Pokemon-type matchups in this, like, Wolverine can never do shit to Magneto, ever.
Nope.
They cannot fight. It just won't happen. Like, he's fucked. And, you know, like, Magneto has to invent the thing, though, so Professor X doesn't take care of him. But if Jean Grey's there and she can lift off the helmet, like, all of the interlocking pieces and people having to set up the scenarios is, like, one of my favorite X-Men things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I only have one other, like, scene that I really enjoy, so go ahead.
I want to see if it's the same one. Magneto, at the very end, like, after some embarrassing displays followed by getting their act together, the X-Men defeat the Brotherhood and get up to Magneto, who then just effortlessly imprisons them without, like, a fucking thought. Like, they are still hopeless to deal with him. They're in the torch of the Statue of Liberty. Anytime the Statue of Liberty gets involved in things, I'm always like, this is pretty fucking silly. But, I mean, comic books, right?
You know what I would have loved if Magneto just animated her?
Oh God, yeah. Yeah, is Copper...
He can do it.
Yeah, like sure.
He did it to restrain all of them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, that's just parts of it. If he just... Lady Liberty stomps on them, and that's... No, he doesn't like America. That's part of the deal here. Comrade Magneto says, this land was supposed to be the land of the free. I came here for that. What fucking happened?
No, I mean, I think he likes Lady Liberty.
Sure.
But just the town, her family hasn't quite lived up
to it. Fair enough. But, yeah, he just binds everybody up in metal. He plasters Scott and Jean facing each other, and then yanks off Scott's metal visor.
That's apparently dumb.
Maybe Sabretooth takes it off. I forget exactly, but, like, I think Magneto does it.
No, I think it is Sabretooth because it crunches it.
Right. Okay. So, either way, it's his plan that Scott loses the visor, so he's like, okay, asshole, open your eyes, and Jean Grey gets fried, and, like, he could still swivel his head. I think maybe they pin his chin or something.
Yeah, they have head strap or whatever.
Yep. And then, you know, Jean Grey is the only one who's really not, like, super contained during this. Storm's bound in, and they're like, hey, Storm, you know, hit him with lightning. And then Magneto's like, you will all surely die. Do not see that you are bound by metal here. Like, because it's previously established, she can't aim the lightning too well. It just happens the way lightning happens. Like, she can coax it, but that's about it. And Wolverine, he pins with his arms crossed such that, hey, pop those claws and you'll slice yourself up. Apparently, he doesn't know about the whole regeneration thing yet, but that's kind of reasonable. Like, nobody's actually seen it in action that much yet.
Yeah, they know that he can heal slightly and, like, take a little more damage, but no one's seen him,
like, come back from the fucking brink.
Yeah, no one's seen him cut his arm off and grow it again, which he can do.
And which he does to escape from this once Magneto's not looking.
Yes.
And then he gets everyone else out, and the whole fucking, like, he grabs Scott's visor, throws it up in the air, Jean pulls it in with the telepathy, and, like, puts it in front of Scott's eyes, but at an angle, so she says, okay, open your eyes, and then he, like, blasts, and she, like, points it at Sabretooth. It's cool as hell.
It is. It's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
That was a really great scene, and it was definitely in contention for my number two slot, but my number one slot, because, I don't know, just what I'm feeling,
right,
is just the entire time that Rogue is in the high school,
mm-hmm.
and just going around doing school things.
Yeah.
I think it's real cool and fun. Fireboy making a little fireball, like, huh, check this out, girl. I'm so hot and awesome, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then Iceman just freezing the fire.
Ollie, listen.
That didn't make
Do you think it's time to introduce a brand new segment to our podcast, Too Cold? 'Cause it's too
cold. No, I'm going to stick with Too Hot.
Too hot.
Really?
Because you can't freeze fire, it's too hot.
You can't
freeze... Because it's fire, and it's not a...
Yeah, you can't freeze fire, it's not a substance.
Fireman!
I mean, so presumably, okay, I'm gonna meet him 75% of the way there, alright? Presumably he just cooled the fire to the point that it could not be fire anymore, and in the place where it was, the water vapor froze into the shape that the fire was in. Like, he deliberately made it that shape to kind of give that illusion rather than the filmmakers actually thinking fire was a thing what could be frozen. I'm reaching real hard
because
I like Bobby. I like Iceman a lot. I like Pyro a lot. Like, all of those characters are close to my heart. So I want to let him have it.
Fair enough. Also, quick side segment of
but I'm
that.
Still, it's still too hot. Don't
Definitely.
Worry.
Actually, anything Iceman does is too hot. If he becomes that cool that quickly, there's an exchange of energy that needs to go somewhere. If all of his energy goes to cold, everything with him has to go somewhere else.
This is why in D&D it's just like, oh, I'm teleporting it from the elemental plane of water. That's where the water comes from. I'm not doing air molecule stuff because that's fake science. And also, I doubt they thought about it that hard, but just any explanation to it so as to not get there. But too hot / too cold, we finally brought it back.
Woo!
But yeah, I love the high school stuff. I would love an entire movie of just the school with high school drama, and they have superpowers, but it doesn't matter at all. That would be incredible.
Yeah, all the only thing that the superpowers do is just, I don't know, improve the level of antics that the people get up to.
And now makes me really want to watch Sky High, because the only actual violence in that happens in the last, like, 10%.
Basically, what we're saying is, go watch Sky High. It's a really good X-Men movie.
Oh, watch this one, too, though, I think. Like, this... final summations, right?
Yeah, let's go to final summations. I really enjoyed it. It's probably one of the best movies from the early 2000s, hands down.
Yeah.
And even to this day, a really good superhero movie.
Yeah, I was a little worried watching it. I was like, man, what if I think this sucks? I can't deal with parting from this. It's already bad enough that hated sex monster Bryan Singer was the guy for this one. It does not kill the movie. Like, that the art exists on it in its own right, and the other people working on it, like Patrick Stewart, has done a lot for the world. I'm not going to compare or anything. That's not how that works. But, you know, it this outlasts in a way. But I couldn't deal with it sucking as well, and it super doesn't.
Exactly. And, is there some fidgety stuff with the technological advancements of the time? Yes.
Oh, yeah.
There's a scene where Wolverine is thrown almost off of the Lady Liberty head, and he manages to get back on by stabbing into her horns that protrude and swinging around through some amount of friction.
I'm okay with it. Just let it happen.
Anyways, nonsense aside, it doesn't look great. It's very clearly badly animated, but for the time it was pretty high tech. For nowadays, it's kind of like, ooh, that's noticeable.
It is extremely silly in a way that I think ages it like a fine whiskey.
Fair enough. But despite, you know, the technical differences, the agedness of it, I think it's incredibly fun to watch, and it definitely shows a different, I don't know, perspective on a superhero movie that is still not, like, gross and depressing.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like, here's a realistic world where everything's, I don't know, more or less normal, except these fuckos have superpowers.
Yeah. And it's the aspects of the realism that make it so important. Like, I don't know that this movie is, like, you know, it's not, oh, so profound, your mind's gonna be blown, it's like The Matrix, like, you know, you'll think about the world in a different way. Not necessarily. I think the better parts of the X-Men story franchise existence do reach those heights from time to time. Like overall, the X-Men is extremely, like, worthy of respect, and this does it justice. But also, it's just, like, a pretty good, very fun, you know, pre-superhero movie, and holds up for sure. Take our word for it.
Hell yeah. Before we go, I want to say a couple things about just, I don't know, in movies, in anything, any good writing, there's obviously metaphors to whatever, and that's just how people display ideas and concepts in a way that you can connect to while still going beyond what you know. But with, especially with comic books and anything animated where there's not just a text level, there's a visual level, the metaphors can sometimes be what they're intended to and sometimes go beyond in the way that they are analyzed. And I'm bringing this up in this movie less so because of what happens, but more so because it's X-Men and allegory and metaphor are the staple of what X-Men is, and their intended metaphor being racism and segregation and discrimination is bad is important, but they're unintentional metaphors of, but all of our X-Men are white. And
oh, sure. Well, there's one.
Well, there's the
we
one.
We keep forgetting about Storm because she doesn't do or say anything in this movie really that much.
Exactly.
Which is in itself
an issue.
Contributes, you know.
So, like, there's always, like, an intention, and then some things that happen not by, you know, not by purposeful, like, malice, but just they happen. They are subconscious effects of what's going on, and people eventually, maybe at the time, but eventually do see it. Like, I was reminiscing over Dragon Ball Z, just like, proud warrior people, but then I was like, but they're monkeys. who get called monkeys and so on and so forth. And then when
Mr. Popo, but you know,
that's a different matter. But then they lose their tails and are more civilized. And when they level up, they become blonde, blue eyed. It's not intended, but it's clear. Like once you look back, it's like this has weird secondary metaphors. And a lot of things like this do.
I am glad in Dragon Ball Z's case that we know exactly why that is, and it's not because of fucking racist reasons. Because the guy's Japanese, one, and doesn't like, just, I would give a license that he wouldn't have thought about it that way. Also, he just didn't want to shade in everyone's hair. That is the canon stated reason. Anyway, just, you know, in case somehow people are listening don't know anything about Dragon Ball Z and are like, it's propaganda, kind of, but not intentionally, to your point.
Yes. Well, what I'm getting at is, with stuff like this, especially with these kind of characters, there's text and subtext and so much that goes into it that I think it's important to enjoy what you can out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, with the Bryan Singer thing.
Oh, right.
There's a lot of negative connotations to a lot of things that come out.
Mm-hmm.
I know that a lot of people have a hard time dealing with the connection between Bill Cosby and the things he's done.
Right, right, right.
Because for a lot of black men back in the day, he was an amazing father figure, and then he became this.
Right.
And sometimes you have to disconnect a character and a person from the things that they have shown and the things that maybe when you grow up, you eventually learn.
Yeah.
It's difficult.
And I mean, you know, he didn't, Bryan Singer, that is, Bill Cosby as well. Neither of them wrote the damn thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the
point.
The art is...
The art is a thing that you need to appreciate, and someday you'll learn, ooh, that was a little problematic, but you can still appreciate the parts that are good.
And there's also a layer of, like, every time you buy something, you are in some way contributing to the distress of someone else.
Yeah.
The economy and structures of living are built around consuming the weak, and if you examine the absolute logical conclusion of every single one of your actions, you will go insane in a way that is not helpful to the world. Like, you gotta take the artistry and the good as a priority. You don't have to. I'm not, if you're like, nope, can't watch that movie, totally, I mean, thumbs up to you, you know, hats off to you, that is your absolute right if that is a boundary you can't cross. But there's no hard rules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all I was trying to say is try to appreciate the parts of pretty much anything that you can, anything that can teach you something, anything you can learn from any work of art or media. Do what you can with it, learn from it, and, you know, don't be too distressed if in the future you find out, oh man, that show I love so much was kind of problematic. Like, oh, you can still appreciate it. You can still love it.
Yeah, because it you know, what you take away are the good parts, hopefully, yourself are good. Hey, only take away the good parts. And also, you know, even if you can't watch this one, go read Grant Morrison's X-Men run. That one's fine. That one's untarnished.
That's all I have to say.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure if that was a soapbox. Final thing.
Delta Cryptid Soapbox, our second new segment of the day.
Woo!
Mm-hmm. Jim Carrey wasn't in this, was he? He had nothing to do with this. That'd be, who would Jim Carrey, which X-Man would Jim Carrey be?
The future version of Xavier's son.
Okay. That's Legion, right?
Yes.
Okay. I always forget the guy's actual name. There was a Legion show, right? Was that pretty good? Yeah, okay.
But yeah, old Legion, that's Jim Carrey.
Okay.
So good.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. Anyway, well, then we solved that.
Good movie. Maybe enjoy it.
I'm going to go ahead and say that's what we learned was the Jim Carrey thing. And let's get the hell out of here. I know you've got a time constraint today.
Indeed. Okay. I'm going to go escape a room.
Oh, yeah. Congratulations. And if he doesn't make it, listeners, it'll be just me next time.
Yep. We'll be doing public auditions to see who takes my spot.
Oh, God. Oh, God. That's so stressful. Please make it out of there. All right. Let's go.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.